Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks. Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation.
With Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
About 6 minutes after 11 p.m. here on June 3rd, 2017. This is program 185 in the series. To my right, the vivacious and very effervescent Lisa Dimples Wolf. What's up, Lisa?
What's up, Carl? How are you?
I'm good. Hey, look who's back.
Oh, we're really glad to have you back, Shantae.
Shantae Garth is back. She took last weekend off. She was doing something for Memorial Day.
That's unacceptable, but okay.
Nobody can take any time off here on the WGN Radio Theater. And tonight we have some great classic radio shows for our listeners, including Suspense, starring Van Johnson. In The Song of the Heart, a good program from 1948. Then Joseph Cotten stars in a sci-fi adventure of the Hollywood Star Playhouse. And then it's a good sort of a detective drama on Nightbeat starring Frank Lovejoy, all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actress stars as Gamora in the upcoming film Avengers Infinity War, the sequel to 2015's Avengers Age of Ultron.
What?
That's a lot of words.
Wait a minute.
Yep.
She was Gamora in Avengers?
She will be Gamora in the upcoming film Avengers Infinity War.
I don't think you're right.
Really?
No, I think she's Gamora in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Well, I will check my work, but this, I've never been wrong before.
Well, you have. I think you're wrong now. But maybe I'm wrong.
All right.
Well, she's right.
She's right and I'm wrong? Oh,
well,
man.
It's if you read what the next Avengers movie is,
exactly.
Guardians of the Galaxy, some of them will be in the next Avengers movie.
Oh, okay, because she's Gamora in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Correct.
So maybe we're
but
both
they
right.
Are going to be,
but what I said
is
correct.
A lot of Marvel characters in the next Avengers.
Exactly. See, we just have to ask, you know.
Roger.
We just ask Roger.
Mr. Geek,
the wizard.
Right here. Thank you.
All right, so the number to call, 312-981-7200.
You should not doubt me.
Nah.
Okay.
What do they win?
They're going to win a $25 gift certificate for Lou Malnati.
All right, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. She plays Gamora in Guardians of the Galaxy 1 and 2.
As a child, you would carry his picture in your pocket and you would tell all the other children that he was your father, but that he was out of town.
Who is that great actress? Call us right now, 312-981-7200, and win a pizza. We'll be right back.
So we're back. This is show 185 of the WGN Radio Theater playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it again.
As a child, you would carry his picture in your pocket and you would tell all the other children that he was your father, but that he was out of town.
Hey, Kathy, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Good to hear from you, and we're hoping that you can tell us who that fine actress is.
Zoe Saldana.
Zoe Saldana is exactly right, and Kathy, we're so happy that you're the winner tonight. You've won a Lou Malnati's gift certificate for $25.
She's not hard on the eyes, that Zoe.
Zoe Saldana?
Yeah.
Or Kathy?
Definitely not. Well, Kathy's not either, but I can't see her. It's radio.
It's all in the imagination, Carl. Lou Malnati's, home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnati's.com. Thank you, Kathy. Thank you for listening to our show and for calling in.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
Enjoy the pizza, right. Kathy.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, it's time for Suspense. But before we get into it, you want to talk about Facebook and also Twitter and text in?
Go to our Facebook. It's WGN Radio Theater. We want you to like us. We have our schedule posted on there. We'll be also posting the pictures of the stars from each of the radio shows this evening. You can check that out. It's a great way for you to communicate with us. Also, we have a text in line, 312-981-7200.
Lisa loves reading the text. She reads them all show.
I do.
When you text in, folks, Lisa reads them to me because I can't read.
He doesn't know how to read, so I just read aloud for him.
She reads them
that's
to
not
me.
Actually a joke.
and we talk about it and we answer people as much as we can, but it's a great way to communicate with you.
We love our text in line.
Yeah,
so thank you for communicating with us throughout the night, and it's all done live throughout the show. 312-981-7200.
All right, there we go. Time for Suspense, okay?
Okay.
Suspense was a great radio series. We play these a lot. It came to radio in 1942, lasted all the way to 1962, was really considered the best mystery drama series of the Golden Age, Lisa, and it was billed as radio's outstanding theater of thrills. Really suspenseful thrillers with the biggest names in Hollywood, people like Cary Grant, Orson Welles, and Jimmy Stewart, Henry Fonda, Humphrey Bogart. And it was on the air 20 years, nearly 1,000 broadcasts, and then it made a transition to television in 1949. We have a 1948 radio broadcast for you now from August 26th. This is called The Song of the Heart, and it stars Van Johnson. Here's part one of Suspense.
In just a moment, Suspense with Van Heflin.
Hi, Mr. Martin.
Hello, Frank. What are you doing out here?
I've been fishing, and not for Autolite customers this time, Ab.
Autolite customers? But no, I don't think you'll find many cars in the middle of the bay. Autolite resists spark plugs either.
No cars, but there's plenty of Autolite in powerboats. You know, more Autolite ignition systems are used in marine craft than any other brand?
Old Reliable is the first thought of boat owners, too, eh?
It'd be hard to get back to town if you had a breakdown out here.
Yeah, we wouldn't get back to hear your Suspense show if that happened.
Well, tie up alongside and let's listen to it here. I've got my portable.
Dealers and service stations bring you radio's outstanding theater of thrills. Starring tonight, Mr. Van Heflin in Anton Leder's production of Song of the Heart, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Well, you explain all that to the officer in the car, ma'am. Thank you. Yeah, can I help you?
Please.
What?
I have a confession to make.
A confession?
Please, are you the officer that I'd tell it to?
Well, I'll do, I guess.
My name is Neil Wilson. I live with Tante Alice, Aunt Alice, at 265 West 19th Street.
All right. So?
Last night, I guess it was early this morning, I killed Tante Alice.
Mike?
Yes?
You better get this.
All right.
Go on. You killed your, Tante Alice?
Yes.
How?
I took a pillow and smothered.
Go on.
Could I tell you about it? I mean, all about it?
Sure.
Well, I have a fine job. I'm the general manager of the hand desk company. I've been with them ever since I got out of school. I'm an orphan. I live with my aunt, with Tante Alice.
You live with your aunt?
Yes, I don't remember. My parents, they died when I was just a little boy in an accident. Tante Alice brought me up. She was like my own mother.
Why did you kill her?
I guess I should start when I met Muriel Jones. That was only last Sunday at the annual company picnic. It was the first time I'd ever been to one. Usually I spent Sunday afternoons with Tante Alice. Everyone was at the picnic, from shipping clerks to executives, everyone. But I sat off to the side by myself, and, well, that's the afternoon that I met Muriel.
Having a good time?
What? Oh, yes, thank you.
Isn't it a lovely day?
Yes, it is.
I'm Muriel Jones, accounting department.
How do you do? I'm Neil Wilson.
Yes, I know. Do you mind if I sit down here?
Oh, no, please do.
Thank you.
It's really a beautiful day, isn't it?
What are you staring at?
Well, I didn't...
Don't you like my blouse?
Oh, yes, very much. I wasn't staring.
It's a present. Gift from a friend.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. I like it because I've been told I had pretty shoulders. Do you think so?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Did you come alone?
Yes.
So did I. I had several invitations, but I turned them down.
Why?
Did I turn them down?
Huh.
Because I knew you were going to be here.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I've seen you at the office. You always look so strict. I wanted to meet you and see if you were.
Well, I'm flattered.
You should be. Most of the time, all the men chase after me. This is the first time I ever did anything like this. I'm... Got a cigarette?
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. There you are.
Thanks. Match?
Yeah.
Thanks. Don't you smoke?
Well, not just now, thank you.
Would you like to take me home?
Well, yes, I would.
Should we go now?
All right.
Aren't you going to help me up?
Oh, yes, I'm sorry.
Why, Mr. Wilson, how strong you...
You smell of sunshine.
What a pretty speech. Do you always kiss young ladies when you first meet them?
I never have before.
Never met a young lady like me before, have
No,
you?
No, I haven't.
Don't kiss me anymore here. Take me home.
I'd been out with girls before, but nothing ever came of any of it. I'm too introverted, I guess, to make the first move, and the ladies that I'd known previously were not the kind who'd make the move for me. But Muriel did, and I thought that that meant that she loved me. We drove for a while when we left the picnic, and then I took her home.
I like your car.
Would you like to go for a ride tomorrow?
You mean you'll pick me up in the morning? Drive me to work?
Well, I'd like to.
Oh, isn't that sweet?
About 7:45?
All right. I'll have some coffee ready if you like. Would you like having your morning coffee with me?
Oh, I'm afraid I couldn't. Thanks a lot, though.
It'll be all right. My girlfriend lives here with me.
Oh, no. It's not that. I mean, I always have breakfast with Tante Alice.
Who?
My Aunt Alice. I call her Tante. That means aunt.
Oh. Isn't that silly? We're standing out here like we didn't have a place to go. Won't you come in for a few minutes?
Well, I'd like to.
That's good. I know you'll excuse the looks of the house. I left this morning before I had a chance to straighten things up. You just sit down there.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll put these things in the other room. Is there anything I can get you?
No, thanks. It's very comfortable.
That's good. This is nice.
You're beautiful.
Thank you. Just for saying nice things like that.
Muriel. Muriel, I've...
What?
I've never known anyone like you.
You're just saying that.
No, that's true.
Do you believe in love at first sight?
Yes.
So do I. I knew a girl and a fellow once who got married 3 days after they met. That was love at first sight, wasn't it?
Yes, I'm sure it was.
Is that the way you feel about me?
Yes, it is.
I knew the first time I saw you would be like this, didn't you?
I hoped it would be.
Give me a kiss.
Will you marry me?
Why, Mr. Wilson, how sudden.
No, will you marry me?
I should be delighted.
I drove home without knowing where I was going. I felt as though I'd never breathed before that day. I felt that I was the luckiest man in the world.
Neil, dear?
Oh, yes, Tante Alice.
Did you have a nice day at the picnic, dear?
Oh, I had a wonderful day.
Well, aren't you going to kiss me?
Oh, sure.
Why, Neil, dear, what's that on your mouth?
What? Where?
It looks to me like lip rouge.
Where?
On your mouth, dear, and on your cheek, too. Why, Neil, dear.
Well, it was...
You better let me wipe it off. Who is the girl? Do I know her?
Her name is Muriel Jones. She works at the office in the accounting department.
How is it that I've never met her if you've known her so long?
Well, I haven't. I just met her today.
You just met her?
It was...
And she...
Tante Alice, it was love at first sight.
Was it, dear?
Yes, we're going to be married.
When, dear?
Well, pretty soon, I think.
Am I going to meet her?
Yes, I'll bring her here to dinner tomorrow night.
All right, dear, all right. We'll have a nice dinner for her.
Well, you'll like her, Tondale. She's a wonderful girl.
I'm sure she is, dear, I'm sure. You better get some sleep now. Tomorrow is a work day, you know. Is there something special you'd like for breakfast?
I won't be having breakfast here in the morning, Tante Alice. Muriel's fixing coffee for me at her house.
Just coffee? Well, that's not enough breakfast for a man with a day's work to do.
Oh, coffee's plenty.
But you've never had just coffee for breakfast, Neil, dear.
No, it's enough. Thanks, anyway.
All right. All right, then. I'll just have a little fruit juice here for you before you leave.
No, never mind, Tante Alice. You can sleep in the morning. I'm having breakfast with Muriel. I don't know what time it was when I woke up that night. I'd been dreaming of Muriel. I remember the street lights were out. What woke me was some music from downstairs. Tante Alice hadn't gone to bed yet. She was playing one of her old phonograph records. It was a sweet, sad record. And it's a song that I'll never forget as long as I live.
For Suspense, Autolite is bringing you Mr. Van Heflin in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense.
You went to sleep and your aunt was playing this record.
He's up to the end of the day. He met the girl.
Yes, that's right.
So what happened the next day?
Well, the next day, when I got up in the morning, Tante Alice was already up. Well, I don't know, maybe she hadn't even been asleep. The table was set for two in the breakfast room. The toaster was out, my fruit juice was on the table, and she was frying bacon when I came downstairs.
Good morning, Neil, dear.
Good morning.
You're early, aren't you? Breakfast will be ready in just a moment.
I'm not having breakfast at home. I told you that last night.
Oh, that was last night, Neil, dear. Today is another day.
I'm having breakfast with Muriel. I have to go now. I'll see you this evening.
We'll have a nice dinner, Neil, dear.
I'm bringing Muriel home for dinner with me.
Tonight? Oh, but, dear, that's hardly warning enough.
You said last night that you wanted to meet her.
But so soon, dear?
Now, listen to me. I'm bringing a girl home for you to meet. I love this girl. I want you to be nice to her. I don't want a fiasco like the last time.
Neil, please, dear.
I don't want you pouting and sulking this time. I don't want to have to apologize for your actions.
I think that will be all, Neil, dear. I think that's enough.
If you aren't going to behave yourself properly, now just say so now and we'll not come home for dinner. That's up to you.
I'm only thinking of you. Now, don't be cross. Give me a big smile like you used to when you were a bad little boy.
All right. How's that?
Oh, you can do better than that.
Oh, please, Tante Alice, I'm late. I'll see you at dinner.
All right, dear. You call me from the office if you decide to bring her home for dinner.
We'll be home for dinner. I'm telling you now, I don't have to call you from the office.
You call me, dear.
All right, that's the first portion of Suspense with the Song of the Heart. Lisa told me it was Van Johnson.
No, I did not. Carl does not know how to read.
Typo.
It doesn't know how to read like we said.
What's the difference?
It's Van Heflin.
Van Heflin, Van Johnson. What's the difference? I think it's actually Van Halen.
Yeah, same.
Is the star
I think
of
they're the
show.
Same person, actually.
I think all three people are the same.
If, you're, if have, you begin with Van, you're the same person.
They have a multiple personalities.
Oh, I
like,
gotcha.
Like you do.
Like you.
Yeah. All right, so I goofed. It's not Van Johnson. It's Van Heflin.
And I just posted a picture of Van Heflin on our Facebook page, so check it out.
All right, so sorry about that, folks. Song of the Heart, August 26, 1948. We'll get back to Van Heflin, starring in the Suspense broadcast in just a few moments. We're tuning in to Suspense, starring Van Halen.
We've got some text. We've got Van Wilder, Van Helsing.
Van Wilder, yeah. Van Helsing.
Yep.
Other Vans.
Vans.
Van, there's Van
there's shoes.
Shoes. Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Van Gogh.
Van Gogh, yeah.
Nice.
See?
Van Jones.
Van Jones, yeah. Who is Van Jones?
I don't know who that is.
Former Obama administration.
Okay, oh, Van
there
Jones.
You go.
Works
right.
on CNN now.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Vanity.
The Van Vanity. Allen radiation. The Van Allen radiation belt.
How about this one, Dick Van Dyke?
Van.
Huh?
And Jerry Van Dyke.
That's right, Jerry Van Dyke. So it's a lot of vans. It's easy to
Allied
be confused.
Allied Van Lines.
Allied Van.
We're moving from the first name to the middle name here.
Do you see how easy it is to be confused? I mean,
no.
I don't even need to. I'm always confused.
You're always. That's exactly what I was going to say.
So, all right. Well, thanks for that.
And if you want to stretch it, Klaus von Bülow.
Wow, well, yeah.
That goes back a ways.
Klaus
you
von,
probably don't remember
who
that.
Who is that person? Klaus von Bülow.
Klaus von Bülow.
He's, German?
What did they do, or he?
Oh, he was accused of killing his wife.
Oh.
Oh, well, that makes sense, right, Carl?
That's no big deal. Okay, we'll get back to suspense. And then also, Joseph Cotten stars in a good episode of the Hollywood Star Playhouse, a sci-fi episode. And then Nightbeat with Frank Lovejoy. We got a great lineup on the agenda here, Lisa. Thanks to you.
You are welcome.
Because you are so good at picking out these shows. Just make sure you write the right person's name down
you
next
just
time
have to
so
read
I
it.
Don't sound...
You just have to learn how to read properly.
Yeah, I'll learn how to
you
read
keep
all
working
right
at that.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
I think that's Bill Van Curtis right there, right?
Van Bill.
Van
it's
Bill.
Van. Bill's actually his middle name.
Yeah.
He starts with a van, though.
There's a lot of vans. You know, when you, it's, van is not that, you know, that.
Esoteric.
No, I mean, the name is kind of, you don't, there's not many people named Van, but yet there was two major movie stars named Van, Van Johnson and Van Heflin, and I got
them
confused.
I think we went through this already.
But, you know, but listen, I'm not going to mess up Joseph Cotten's name or Frank Lovejoy. You goofed up Frank Lovejoy's name last year, but we won't talk about how badly butchered his name.
What did I say?
I'm not going to say.
I didn't think so.
Because we'll end up on Nick's, what is it? What's it called?
Inappropriate.
Yeah, I'm not going to say what you called Frank Lovejoy. I'm not going to do that.
Well,
I'm not
going to
throw you under the bus. What's the weather like down there?
It has a I don't know. What
whatever, right?
Okay.
Okay. So, listen, we're here every Saturday and Sunday night, and we play these classic radio shows for you. All your favorites, Jack Benny, Dragnet, The Whistler, Gunsmoke, The Lone Ranger. You know, today I was playing baseball, Lisa, and somebody mentioned, oh, I'll be listening to your show. And then the umpire said to me, what show? You have a radio show? I said, yeah, WGN. And he was like, what do you do on WGN? I said, oh, I play the classic radio show. He was a young guy. Oh, you mean like Dragnet and Gunsmoke and
well,
all this?
Those are the ones they actually had a chance to watch on television, perchance,
he
too.
Knew all of it. He was like, oh, man, what time, what channel? You know, I said, same bat time, same bat channel. We're here every Saturday and Sunday from 11 p.m. until 2 o'clock in the morning. Right?
I'm here.
Lisa gets here at 10:59 and 38 seconds.
Well, at least I'm
here. She makes it in here. She's like, where's my coffee? Get out of my way. You know, turn my computer on.
Move out of my way. I'm here now.
Get out of my way.
I had trouble getting in the parking lot tonight.
Why, your fans?
No, it didn't open.
Mine too. It
I thought I was fired.
Yeah, it didn't open. I used my badge and it wouldn't open.
I used my pass and it didn't open. I thought, okay, they had enough of me.
You know, when you're on your way out, they start making the power less and less on your badge.
I thought, okay, if we don't get her in the parking lot, then that'll be that.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
Mm.
All right.
Okay, so we're listening to Suspense, and Van Heflin is the star. It's called Song of the Heart. Let's get back to the conclusion of Suspense.
You see, the last time I tried to bring a girl home, Tante Alice had acted just the same way. She'd behaved so badly that I'd never done it again. That had been after the junior class party at high school. It's 13 years ago, and I'd never done it again. I waited for Muriel after work that evening, and we drove toward my home together.
Hold your head still so I can kiss you.
Let's get married tomorrow.
Why, Mr. Wilson, I said...
No, really.
Well, what about your Aunt Alice?
What about her?
She won't be angry at me, stealing you away from her?
Why should she be?
Well, the way she's hung on to you. For instance, why doesn't she live by herself?
Well, I don't know. We've been together so long, I guess.
Sure, but after all, she's only your aunt. You've got a life of your own to lead. She's got enough money to live by herself.
Well, it's not money. She's quite wealthy. How did you know she had money?
Oh, I heard someone at the office talk about it.
Oh. Look, incidentally, Aunt Alice might act a little strangely when I bring you in the house. Just don't pay any attention to her. If she tries to do anything or say anything to upset you, promise me that now.
I promise you.
I can understand her being upset at someone taking you away from her, though. After all, takes one to know one.
The rest of the ride home, we didn't talk. Mira just sat close to me, and she held my hand in hers.
I mean, I'll take your coat.
Oh, thank you.
Come on, let's go into the living room.
What's that playing?
Oh, that's the phonograph.
Pretty old machine, isn't it?
Well, that's the, it's the record scratching. That's what she's playing last night.
What is it, French?
Yes, Tante Alice has a collection of old records. You know, this is the first time she's played them in years since I was in high school.
Where is she?
I don't know. She must be in the kitchen.
Well, I might as well sit down, I guess. Oh, I forgot to ask you. Are my seams straight?
What? Oh, yes, sir. They look straight.
So hard to keep your stockings straight. I never can get mine long enough, see? Well, what? Good evening, working people.
Oh, good evening, Tante Alice.
And this must be Mabel.
No, it's Muriel. Muriel, this is my aunt, Miss Alice Tremble. Tante Alice, this is Muriel, Miss Muriel Jones.
How do you do?
Oh, please sit down. Dinner will be ready soon. Is the phonograph too loud? I was just playing some old records.
Yes, it is a little loud, Tante Alice.
Oh. That's better.
Is there anything I can do to help?
No, that's all right, dear. Just last-minute things like the gravy. I'll do them in a bit. I'll just sit here with you two young people for a while. Oh, my, I've had a day. Preparing to meet Neil's latest young lady. He always does this to me. Calls suddenly in the middle of the afternoon and says, I'm bringing a young lady home for dinner.
Why do you
Both
say...
Both of me wants to marry, as though he thinks. As he said, he wants to marry you. Be careful of him. He's a devil.
Tante Alice, please. Now, that's not true.
Can you imagine wanting to get married before you really get to know someone?
Did Neil tell you we're going to get married?
He did ask you then. Oh, Neil, shame on you.
Shall we have our dinner?
In a moment, dear. In a moment. You poor little girl. And Neil has been acting the Don Juan with you also. You poor dear. Well, excuse me. I'll let you hear some of my records while I make the gravy.
Would you like me to help?
No. You stay with the young lady. Muriel, is it? I can handle things alone this once. And after all, if she should ever come back here again, I want her to think kindly of us. Wasn't that a nice dinner?
Very nice, thank you.
Did you enjoy your dinner, Neil, dear?
Yes, it was very nice, Tante Alice. Neil, would you like a cigarette?
Thanks.
Neil, dear, don't you think you should take the girl home now so that we can go to bed?
Well, you can go, Tante Alice. We'll sit here for a while.
Well, all right. I'm very tired. Good night, young lady. I do hope you stop in and see us again someday. I'm always delighted to meet Neil's friends. Neil, dear, you haven't oiled my door.
What am I going to do, Weather? What am I going to do?
I don't think I've ever been treated that way.
Oh, I'm sorry, darling. Please believe me. I'm sorry, but what can I do? How can I get rid of her?
Just leave. When we're married, we'll leave.
Oh, she'll follow us. I'm all she has in the world. I wish she were dead.
Neil.
No, I wish she were dead. What good is she to anyone? Hanging on for dear life to me, holding me, afraid that I'll go out on my own and have my own life and that she'll have no part of it. Oh, sure, she's been good to me, and she's worked for me, but I've been good to her, too, and I've helped her.
We'll go away together. She won't follow us. Have you enough money?
Well, I think so. Yes, I have enough. And then there's always her money. She has it lying all over the house. She doesn't believe in banks.
Well, you could take some of that. I think that's fair.
Oh, listen, we better be quiet. She'll hear us.
Well, I'll turn the phonograph on, then she won't. You're right, though.
About what?
What use is she? She has money which she doesn't need. She's unhappy living alone. Would kill her to live alone. Yet... I hate to say this, dear. I won't live in the same house with
her. No, I don't blame you.
I was thinking there are a lot of people whose time is finished.
Yeah.
You know, that they've done all they're good for.
I read once where Eskimos put their aged people on ice floes and push them out into the ocean. No ceremony, no sorrow. Just that... It's the end of their time of usefulness, and that's that.
Neil.
You know, it would be doing her a favor. She wouldn't know.
Well, you did say she wouldn't live long without you, Neil, but she'd probably die of loneliness.
She's never been alone.
And if she is going to follow us, like you said, then I'm sorry I can't marry you, Neil. And that's hard for me to say because I love you. I don't think I've ever been in love before. Never before you.
I need you, Muriel, very badly. I think that we should have the opportunity to make good with our lives.
Sure we should.
But how? How?
As gently as possible.
Yes. Well, after she's asleep tonight, just put a pillow over her face. No one will ever know.
It would be doing her a favor, Neil.
Look, they couldn't tell. I mean, they...
How could they? Well, she's old. She's smothered in her sleep.
Yeah, that's right.
And we could use her money to go away. After all, she won't need it.
That's true enough.
It's here in the house?
Well, all of it, it's in cash, $5,000 or something. Mary, look, you do love me now, don't you?
You know I do. Kiss me.
What was that? Oh, Tanya Alice.
Yes, Neil, dear. I was listening to the record playing. I'm so glad you children enjoy it. Isn't it a lovely song? You know what it means?
No. No, I don't.
Turn it off, please, Neil, dear.
Sorry.
Oh, I feel so odd tonight. I think I should like to tell you a story before I go to sleep. Would the girl mind?
Go ahead.
That record tells a story about a boy and his mother. The boy lived at home with his mother, and the boy met a girl. And the mother didn't like the girl and warned the boy away from her. But the girl used all her wiles on the boy, and the boy turned against his mother. And the girl told him that proof of his love for her would be that he killed his mother. And proof of the killing would be that he brought the girl, his mother's heart. And so the poor boy killed his mother and took her heart to bring it to the girl. And on the way, he stumbled and fell, and the heart escaped his hands. And before he could get to his feet again, or even see if he was injured from the fall, the heart spoke, and the heart said to him, "Are you hurt, my son?" I cried when I heard that song the first time. Such a sad...
You'd better go to sleep now. It's late.
Good night, Neil, dear. Sleep well. Sleep well.
What an unpleasant story.
She knows all sorts of things, like that fable sort of. She gets older, she quotes them to me at great length.
Will it take her long to go to sleep?
No. She's told me a story now. She'll go right to sleep now. We sat there and waited, not saying anything, not touching one another, just waiting. Finally, after about an hour, Muriel suddenly kissed me. She kissed me hard, and she held me close to her. Then I got up, and I walked quietly over to Tanta Alice's door. I opened it, and I walked into her bedroom. She was sleeping on her back. I took a pillow from her chaise, and then, just as I was about to put it over her face, I thought I saw her eyes move. Waited. No, I was mistaken. She was sleeping soundly, just as she always did. I lowered the pillow softly over her mouth and nose, and then I held it there. Watched her chest until there was no movement from her breathing. Then I opened her bureau drawer and took out her money box. And then Muriel and I left the house.
All right?
Yes, all right.
And don't feel badly. You did a good thing. It's just like a mercy killing. It was for her own good.
I know that.
We've got each other now and a whole life to live together without any interference.
I know.
I'll drive. Poor baby. You're upset.
All right.
Can I have the keys?
Yes, right here.
Oh.
What?
Did you take the pillow off her face?
Oh, no, I forgot.
Run back and do it. You can leave the box on the seat. Hurry now.
Thank you.
I heard the car leave, and I knew what it meant. And I didn't do anything about it. I just stood there. I wanted to cry. I didn't go into Tante Alice's room. I just stood there. After a while, I opened the front door again. Went and sat down on the steps and waited for the light to come. And all night long, I heard the record playing in my brain. And I heard Tante Alice saying, and the heart spoke. And the heart said to him, are you hurt, my son?
That it?
That's it.
I'll type it up for him to sign.
All right, Mike.
She's driving my car, but I don't care. I mean, if you want to catch her, she's driving my car.
We'll catch her.
What do I do now?
You come with me. Funny you're coming in here this morning. Although, of course, we'd have had a routine investigation anyway.
Because the pillow was still on her face?
Well, yeah. Although she might have had a heart attack, or the pillow might have smothered her without her knowing it. Most accidental deaths are pretty strange. Much stranger than the planned ones. No, I meant that you didn't look at the room very closely when you went in there to kill your aunt. In here.
What do you mean that I didn't look at the room very closely?
Your aunt was a pretty smart cookie. And I guess she was really looking out for you. Warning you with that song. Anticipating what you were planning. We were over there this morning. The door was open, the prowl car spotted it and went to see what was cooking. Must have been after you left to come down here. They found your aunt's body, but they turned in a sort of routine report.
Routine?
Yeah. This case looked open and shut. Because right next to the bed on her night table, in her own handwriting, your Tante Alice left a suicide note.
Thank you, Van Heflin, for a splendid performance. Mr. Heflin will return in just a moment.
Boy, that show was a knockout. Well, thanks for letting us listen, Frank.
Always glad to do a friend a favor.
You must have lots of friends, Frank. You do plenty of folks a favor, telling them about Autolite resistor spark plugs.
Well, Hap, every car owner who switches to Autolite resistor spark plugs does himself a favor. When you replace your narrow-gap spark plugs with the sensational new wide-gap Autolite resistor spark plugs, you can tell the difference in your car. You got advantages like smoother idling and saving gas. So, always remember, Autolite means spark plugs.
Ignition-engineered resistor spark plugs.
Autolite means batteries.
Stay-full batteries.
Autolite means ignition systems.
The lifeline of your car.
And now here again is Mr. Van Heflin.
It's always a great pleasure to join Tony Leader and his fine cast of suspense actors on radio's outstanding theater of thrills. And speaking of thrills, there are plenty in store for you next week when Suspense brings you wonderful Madeline Carroll in The Morrison Affair. Another gripping study in
Suspense.
Mr. Van Heflin appeared by arrangement with Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, producers of Julia Misbehaves, starring Greer Garson and Walter Pidgeon. Doreen Tuttle played the part of Tante Alice, and Betty Lou Gerson was Muriel. Tonight's suspense play was written by Elliot Lewis, with music composed by Lucian Morawick and conducted by Lud Luskin. The entire production was under the direction of Anton M. Leader. Next Thursday, same time, you will hear Madeline Carroll in The Morrison Affair.
This is the Autolite Suspense Show. Go slow. Death and danger travel in fast company. Good night. Switch to Autolite.
This is CBS, where 99 million people gather every week, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
I think it's a piano there. What do you think? Is that a piano?
I think whatever you say, you're probably right. Whatever you say.
That's a good, cool theme, right? Suspense, great
radio.
That might
be a glockenspiel, actually.
A glockenspiel, really?
That's not a piano.
Not a piano.
Da, 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 da. Those tones?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not a piano.
So that's a glockenspiel?
It might be a glockenspiel. That sounds like something that is struck with a hammer.
You know what? I'll look it up.
I got struck with a hammer when
we can tell.
Yes, we know.
We noticed that.
And I still have the effects from it.
We know.
35 years later.
We do know.
Yeah. Well, let's check on that.
I'll let you know.
Yeah, Lisa will do a little detective work.
I'm on it.
Thanks. I appreciate that. All right, Suspense, Song of the Heart with Van Down by the River.
Right.
Van Heflin from August 26, 1948. Hope you enjoyed Suspense. Let's take a quick break.
Oh, you forgot one.
Which one?
Jean-Claude
Van Damme. Yeah, that's right. There's a show, he has a show on Netflix or one of these or Amazon where he makes fun of himself. It's a very, very funny show. Claude Van Damme. Yeah. All right, let's take a break. More when we come. All right, Lisa and I are here, and so is Shantae Garth, and we're bringing you these great classic radio shows. In our next hour, we're going to tune in to a sci-fi story called The Tenth Planet on Hollywood Star Playhouse starring Joseph Cotten. And then it's Nightbeat. In our third hour, Frank Lovejoy. And Nightbeat, Lisa, was set in Chicago, although it was broadcast out of Los Angeles. But the setting was the Windy City right here. And it's interesting, sometimes they would mention street sign, streets,
right?
And they would mispronounce them,
right? And they actually changed some of them slightly.
Well,
didn't they?
No, they would say actual streets of Chicago, but they would, I can't recall exactly which ones right now, but they would say them, not correctly.
Maybe you're the one that wasn't saying them correctly.
No, I think I've been,
possible.
I'm a Chicago boy,
born is
right here. I was hatched right here, Lisa.
I know.
All right, so as I say, Hollywood Star Playhouse at our next hour, then Nightbeat. Want to remind everyone listening that we have a website that you can go and sign up. It's absolutely free. It's called freeradioclassics.com. If you go to this site and you just put your name and email address, then every single Monday you'll receive an email from me. And in that email will be an embedded classic radio show. It's a different show every week. It might be Suspense one week, then Gunsmoke, might be The Lone Ranger, might be Dragnet, whatever it is. You'll get an embedded classic radio show in the email, and then also a picture of whoever is starring in that classic radio show, plus the synopsis, what the original broadcast date was, who the sponsor was, and other fun stuff, all in this email, and it's absolutely free. Just sign up to freeradioclassics.com and you'll get your first email this coming Monday. I'm trying to think, what was it last week?
I knew you were going to ask me that. I'm so sorry. I don't remember.
It was something good.
I can look it up.
I can't remember what it was. But every single week we send you something. I do these way in advance, so I can't always remember what it is coming up. But last week, I think it was something kind of cool.
I'm sure it was good. But I don't remember what it is.
I actually think it was Nightbeat. I think it might have been Nightbeat. I don't know. All right. Well, it is. It's midnight, Lisa. It's already midnight. A whole hour's already gone.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thanks, David Jennings. All right. It is our second hour, hour two, and it is now Sunday morning. We see how that happens. We started on Saturday. This is how long we work. We tirelessly work. We work two straight days here.
Saturday, Sunday, and
Monday. And into Monday, yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot of work.
Gosh, they work our fingers to the bone here.
We're bleeding.
Yeah. All right, so this hour, it's the Hollywood Star Playhouse starring Joseph Cotten in a good sci-fi adventure. And then hour three, it's Frank Lovejoy starring in Nightbeat, all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actress stars in the upcoming film Black Panther, the 18th installment in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Wow, really?
Wow, yes, indeed.
All right.
And the winner gets a Twilight Zone 4 CD set.
312-981-7200. That's the number to call. Now, here's a hint. She was the star of the film Waiting to Exhale.
No, Bernadine, you can't start the catering business this year. Why don't you wait a few years, huh?
All right, who is that great actress? 312-981-7200. Win some Twilight Zone CDs. We'll find our winner after these words.
No, Bernadine, you can't start the catering business this year. Why don't you wait a few years, huh?
Yeah, that's it. Did you ever see that movie?
I know,
Waiting
I haven't.
Waiting to Exhale?
No.
Oh, that was good. That was a good movie.
Well,
it was out a while ago.
You know, that was a good choice.
Yeah.
who do we have on the line, Shantae?
Somebody's going to win, I think, but... Oh, you have somebody else? All right. Well,
somebody's a winner. But we just I don't know their name.
Well, I'll do the suspense thing then. Dun,
okay.
Dun, dun, bum, 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 bum. Okay, there
oh,
you go.
Oh, it's Stephanie. Hey, Stephanie.
Let's put Stephanie on.
Wait, she's coming. Hi, Stephanie. Nope.
Hang on
not
a second.
Stephanie.
Wait, maybe not. Huh? There?
Hey, I'm here.
All right.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, good. How are you?
We thought we lost you.
We were getting worried there, Stephanie.
Oh, hey. So I'm like, oh, no, she got... I got cut off, so I called right back.
Oh,
that was Carl's fault. He said, I don't want her. He just kind of hit the phone down.
If something goes wrong.
It usually is.
Money, Stephanie's.
No, Stephanie, I don't want that one. Stephanie, who is that actress?
Angela Bassett.
Angela Bassett is exactly right, and we are so happy to give you a Twilight Zone 4 CD set. It stars... stars Stacey Keach.
Yes.
And it's produced by Carl Amari.
Yes.
So it's a fantastic...
So one out of two is not bad.
One out of...
Stacey Keach.
Right, exactly.
Hey, I am thrilled. I really am, actually. I have heard them before, and they're excellent.
Oh,
they are
you.
Excellent.
They really, really are great.
Well, Stacey does a great job anyhow.
Absolutely.
Well, I hope you enjoy it, Stephanie, and thanks for calling in. Appreciate you staying up and listening to the show.
Oh, I love it. Love it. I have listened since the very beginning.
Really?
I love the show.
Wow.
I'm an OTR, old-time radio freak.
Absolutely. Next time we have a fan appreciation event, come out to it.
I will do that.
You know what?
My granddaughter lives in Chicago. I live in Wisconsin, but I would love to... Love to do that.
You know what we're going to do it at your house next time. And
we'll
that way you'll be
Wisconsin.
There. We're going to hang out in your living room
for
a while.
We'll barbecue. You know, we'll do a barbecue.
Why not?
Yeah.
Why not?
All right. Take care. Thanks,
Stephanie. Thanks,
Stephanie.
Take care.
Hey, you too. Thank you.
You're Bye-bye. Welcome. All right. It's
Thanks.
Time. You're very welcome. And it's time for Hollywood Star Playhouse. You know, I only have a couple of these episodes, Lisa, and I listened to this particular episode, and I was really, really impressed. Hollywood Star Playhouse came to radio for a short period of time, 1950 through 1953. But it aired on three different networks. It kind of moved around. It was on CBS, ABC, and NBC. And on this show, a different top screen personality appeared each week in original stories of mystery and adventure by the top writers of the day. Now, listen to this. This show was Marilyn Monroe's first radio broadcast. She did Hollywood Star Playhouse, and it was the first time she ever did anything on radio. Also, James Stewart, Deborah Kerr, Charlton Heston, and then the cast was really L.A.'s best supporting players. So it was well done, a lot like Suspense, where they would have a Western one week and then a drama. Well, this particular week, Joseph Cotten starred, and it was a sci-fi story called The Tenth Planet. So let's go back to September 7th, 1952. Here's part one now of the Hollywood Star Playhouse.
This is Joseph Cotten inviting you to listen now to Hollywood Star Playhouse, brought to you by the Bakers of America. Star Playhouse. 30 minutes of mystery, thrills, drama by Hollywood's finest writers featuring Hollywood's top stars. Brought to you by the Bakers of America through the cooperation of your baker. Hello there, this is Wendell Niles. Today's transcribed story, The Tenth Planet, starring Mr. Joseph Cotten. And now, Act One of The Tenth Planet, starring Mr. Joseph Cotten.
It's only a matter of time. They know our weakness and they know our strength. And they will conquer and rule the Earth. It is only a matter of time. The time it takes to reach Earth from the 10th planet. My name is Walker. My home is in California, North American continent, planet Earth. I'm writing this in a room deep inside a spaceship approximately 4.5 million miles from Earth. On Earth, I was a teacher of mathematics. Among the others seated about me are a doctor, an accountant, a judge, an actor, a machinist, a farmer. The list is a long one. There are men of various nationalities who, one by one, disappeared off the face of the Earth. There are men who are being taken to the 10th planet. My life, for the most part, has been average, unexciting. On Earth, I attended church, discussed politics, gave my son boxing lessons, and on Saturday nights, my wife and I usually had a few friends in for bridge. These things are important, not only that you may know more about me, but that I may carefully report and you may evaluate everything that has happened since the afternoon I walked into my home and found a visitor awaiting me, a visitor from the Bureau in Washington. Hi, darling. Oh.
Todd, this is Mr. Webster. He's with the Bureau.
How do you do, Mr. Walker?
He's a key man, Pop. A real honest...
Bobby.
Yes, Bobby. I suppose you and Mummy...
Yes, kind of... I'll keep him occupied, dear.
Thanks.
Come on, Bobby.
We'll go down to the market.
Yeah. Sit down, Mr. Webster.
Thank you. Here are my credentials, Mr. Walker.
Mm-hmm. Just what do you want to see me about?
How long has it been since you've seen your brother, Mr. Walker?
Oh, Harry? Oh, I haven't seen him since he went... Work at the Atomic Center over in New Mexico.
You talked to him recently? On the phone, I mean?
No. Why do you...
Letters from him?
Well, he usually writes about once a week, but I haven't had a letter now in, oh, I guess it's been close to 3 weeks.
Well, what did he write then?
Oh, just the usual things. Working hard, feeling fine. Usual things a brother writes.
No mention of his work?
No. He's never written about his work. It's highly secret, I believe.
Yeah. Mr. Walker, you and your brother have always been very close, haven't you?
Yes, ever since our father died.
And he hasn't contacted you in any way during the past 2 weeks.
That's right.
Well, I guess that checks you out, Mr. Walker. Sorry to have bothered you.
Mr. Webster.
Yeah?
What's happened to Harry?
I'm sorry, Mr. Walker. My orders were to contact you, find out when you heard from him last. That's all I know.
He's dead.
Dead? Why do you say that?
If he weren't, I'd have heard from him.
Well, you can't be sure of that now. He may have been transferred. His work is classified. There could be any number of reasons.
No. When Harry took the job, we prepared for that. We have a code.
A code?
We agreed that if he should suddenly be sent somewhere unexpectedly, or if he weren't free to let me know where he is or what he's doing, he'd send me a wire saying, "Happy birthday, Pappy."
Mm-hmm. Pappy?
Well, he's called me that since Dad died.
I see. Well, now, let's not look on the black side, Mr. Walker. You may hear from him any day.
Can you give me any other information about him?
I'm sorry. I'm just doing a job.
So was he. Webster was barely out of the house when I was on the phone. After an hour and 20 minutes or so of red tape, I reached a security officer at the Atomic Center in New Mexico.
Security, Major Collins speaking.
Major, I'm the brother of Harry Walker.
Are you calling from New York, Mr. Walker?
I'm calling from my home in California. What difference does that make?
Well, if you give me your number, I'll call you back.
I realize the necessity of a caution, but I don't understand why you people won't tell me what's happened to Harry.
I'm sorry, Mr. Walker. I'll have to call you back.
Don't bother, Major. I'll be over there by tomorrow night. The heat was rising off the asphalt-covered street as I drove through the small desert town of Lurock. I was hot, dirty, and tired after driving all night. There weren't any signs to show me the way to the Atomic Center, so I stopped for coffee and got all the directions I needed. 45 minutes later, I was in a small frame building, a kind of sentry post,
waiting for Major Collins.
Sorry to keep you waiting, Mr. Walker.
Major Collins?
Yes. I had to stop inside to pick up your brother's personal file. Before we say anything else, I have a few questions I'd like to ask you.
You have questions to ask me?
Please, Mr. Walker, sit down and let me begin.
Well, what's that?
Just a routine test. Now then, according to this file, Harry Walker's nearest living relative is his brother, Todd Walker. What is your wife's maiden name, Mr. Walker?
Miller, Jean Miller.
The birth date of your son?
April 12th, 1941.
Your grandfather's birthplace?
England. I believe Ipswich. Not too sure. Now, look here, Major.
Just a few more, Mr. Walker. What was the name of the family that lived next door to you in 1933?
33, well, we lived in Adamsville then. Well, there was a girl, her father was a minister. Don't remember their name, though.
What happened to a dog you owned called Spot?
Well, Spot was killed. He fell down a flight of cement stairs. I was only 10 years old when that happened. Now, Major Collins...
Here's your pass. Now, if you come with me, Mr. Walker, I'll tell you everything we know about the disappearance of your brother.
Before I had a chance to say anything else, before I could think of anything else to say, we were beyond the two sentry posts, through the great steel gate and inside the restricted area of the atomic center.
You aren't radioactive, are you, Mr. Walker?
What?
We're passing through a safety zone. If either of us is contaminated by radioactive materials, pitchblende, uranium, an alarm bell will sound.
Oh.
How's your son doing in school this year?
Bobby, oh, fine.
I read the last two letters you wrote to your brother. Sounds like you got quite a boy on your hands.
Yeah, he is.
Playing right field on a school baseball team, huh?
First base.
Oh, yes.
Still checking, Major?
Nobody ever died from being too careful. Now, this was your brother's room.
Why is it padlocked?
I didn't want any of his things disturbed. It is exactly as he left it.
When are you going to tell me what happened to him, Major?
Cigarette?
Thank you.
3 weeks ago today, at about 8 p.m, your brother was seen to leave this room and enter the area outside. He appeared to be on his way to the mess hall for supper. He never arrived there.
Where'd he go?
We don't know.
What?
All we do know is that about 50 yards from this building, he was accosted by a man wearing a heavy trench coat.
Trench coat in this heat?
He stopped and talked to this man. That's the last time he was seen.
Well, who was the man in the trench coat?
We haven't been able to identify him. Culver, one of your brother's friends here, saw them together. He heard the man call your brother by name, and he heard your brother mention the word target several times.
Target? This is just the way I left the room, huh?
Yes. Be careful about touching things, please.
Oh. There's your suits and shirts. Billfold. Wristwatch. All of his things are here.
Everything. Even his pass and identification papers. Everything but the clothes on his back.
What's this piece of rock here on the desk? Paperweight?
I suppose so.
It's heavier than it looks. Probably something he was working with.
I can arrange for you to take his personal things in a day or two, Mr. Walker.
Thanks. Well, you certainly can't suspect him of deserting.
We never did. To do that, he'd had to walk out of the camp. He didn't walk out.
Then?
There's only one possible way he could have gotten out of here.
How's that?
Up. Straight up.
We left the room soon after that and started down the stairs. Neither of us said very much as we walked slowly back to the little building at the front gate.
Are you going to stay in Lurac, Mr. Walker? Or do you plan to return to California?
I don't know yet.
When you know, I'd appreciate if you'd call me.
Yes, yes, I will. What's that?
Safety zone alarm. One of us is contaminated.
What?
One of us has radioactive dust on his clothes. Over here, please, quickly. All right, Mr. Walker. I'll step out into the zone first.
Looks like you're it. Will you step out, please? Come on.
Radioactive, are you sure?
Certainly.
How? I haven't touched anything except that paperweight.
I know, Mr. Walker.
I barely touched it.
You'd better spend the night here, Mr. Walker. By the time the boys in the decontamination room get through with you, it'll be quite late.
Thanks. Incidentally, I've made up my mind.
Yes?
I'm going to stay in Luroc. I'm going to find out what happened to Harry.
I'm going to find out what happened to Harry, too.
I know what happened to Harry, but I don't want to tell you.
Figure it out. And that's the first portion of The 10th Planet, starring Joseph Cotten. I got that name right. I did not mess that name up. Hollywood Star Playhouse.
Well, you know what? There's plenty of time to mess
up. Yeah,
other
I can mess
up
Frank Lovejoy's name.
I'm sure you can.
let's take a quick break, and then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. All right. Lisa and I and Shante are here every Saturday and Sunday, 11 p.m. until 2 o'clock in the morning, playing your favorite classic radio shows. And if you would like to reach out to us, ask us a question about these classic shows, or if you have a program you'd like to hear. Somebody earlier said they wanted to hear Dr. Christian.
Right.
I'll make sure and get that off to Lisa for her approval.
Somebody asked for Superman.
Oh, Superman,
that's
yeah.
That's an interesting one.
Up and Away.
That's the one. And an interesting text, somebody said that they were our first like on WGN Radio Theater
really?
Facebook. So that's kind of
wow.
nice.
Wow, yeah. Thank you very
it's
much.
It's an honor, I think.
We're up to about 16, 17 likes now?
No, like 16, 17,000 likes.
Yeah, I wish.
We are way out there.
Wait a minute now. We need more likes. We really,
you
folks.
You just want to be liked.
If you haven't liked our Facebook page, can you do us a big favor? Can you go to Facebook and search WGN Radio Theater and just like us? We'd really, really appreciate it. In fact, it'd be nice. Where are we at right now on
we
it?
Are at 2222.
2222.
Yeah.
Toot, toot.
No, not toot. Toot.
Oh, okay. So let's see how many we can lift it to by the end of tonight.
You want
to
lift it, like take
we
off?
We want to increase it. We want to increase it. It's at 2222.
Yes.
Okay, let's try to get to 2250. Could we do that, folks? Could you help us do that?
Carl.
Well, I would be very happy if we got the 2250.
Okay.
That would make me really happy.
What are you going to do about it?
Well, I don't know. Play.
But we'll show us that
another
you're happy.
Classic radio show.
Tell me how we'll know
folks,
that you're
if you
happy.
Haven't liked our Facebook page, please go to Facebook and like us. And if you can do it, maybe in the next break would be great because I'd like to see it get to 2250. That's our goal.
Okay.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Now that's a piano. That's not a glockenspiel.
That's a piano.
Right.
You come to my house, I'll play some piano.
Roger,
for you.
Did you hear this?
I heard that discussion.
The glockenspiel. Yeah. Do you think it is a glockenspiel?
No, you know what I think it is? It's like in the orchestra in the timpani section. They have all those different noisemakers and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it is the same type of chimes that are used in the William Tell Overture, uh-huh. where they're on this large frame,
uh-huh.
and the chimes are hanging down.
Okay.
They're very large, and they hit them with a soft mallet. I think those are that's the sound.
You mean for suspense? Dum, bum, bum,
yes.
Bum, bum,
yeah, I think
bum.
That's...
Really?
I think that's
I
what
the I would love
instrument.
To find out the answer to this. Yeah. I'm very intrigued by it.
It sounds like it to me. It sounds like the same kind of sound of the bells, if you will, mm-hmm. That are played in the 1812 Overture.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You got some sounds going on in your bells up there.
Hello.
I think it could be.
Yeah.
I think it could be. I would like to know, suspense, what is that instrument for the theme? That'd be cool. All right. Well, thanks, Roger. Thanks for the news and weather and all that good stuff. What I want to know is it going to rain tomorrow about 1 o'clock? I have a baseball game.
No,
you're
going to
be fine.
Clear.
You'll
be good?
Fine.
Okay.
Yeah. You're good.
Whew. Get to play baseball tomorrow. All right,
are you sure that's what they call it? I'm
yeah.
sorry. Go ahead.
It's baseball. It's not
reach
softball.
Reach over and hit the...
baseball. Okay, hang on.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, so stick around, Roger. We need more of you for the rest of the night
I'll
here.
I'll be here.
But right now,
we
it's time...
We need more of you, Roger.
We need more
You're just
of you.
Not enough.
But right now, it's the conclusion to the Hollywood Star Playhouse.
Next morning, I drove back to town and called on a real estate agent. He knew of an adobe house for rent just off the highway about 5 miles from the atomic center, and I took it sight unseen. The house was small but comfortable, and most important, it had a telephone. That evening, I called Jean.
Todd,
it's good to hear your voice. When are you coming home?
I thought I'd stay here a while, Jean. Maybe you and Bobby could fly over.
Of course. When?
Tomorrow?
Wonderful, darling. Did you find out anything about Harry?
He, I'll tell you when you...
Todd?
When you get here.
Well, what's the house like, dear? Todd?
Something's happening here, Jean. Something I don't understand.
What?
Everything's turning green. The house, the room, everything.
Todd, what is it?
There's something out there in the desert, a green light.
Todd. Todd, are you...
Jean, listen to me. Hello. Oh, Dad. That noise. That humming, what is it? Yes? What do you want?
Good evening, Mr. Walker. May I come in? Thank you. Is it always so cold here?
Cold? It's hot over 90.
Precisely.
You're cold, even with that coat on?
I have brought you a message, Mr. Walker. I was told to say happy birthday, Pappy.
Oh, Harry's alive.
Of course.
And you, who are you?
Forgive me. My name is Torgut. I come from the 10th planet.
My heart was pounding like a voodoo drum. I didn't want to believe what I'd heard. Talk of flying saucers, spaceships, interplanetary travel. This wasn't for me. I was a professor of mathematics, a logical man. And yet, there I was in a rented adobe house in the middle of the desert talking to a man who had calmly announced in a manner that made me believe him that he came from an unknown planet somewhere in the Earth's solar system. The 10th planet.
In talking to Earthmen, I find that to be the most simple designation.
But there are only 9 planets in our solar system.
You are mistaken.
But the scientists...
are mistaken.
I see. You say you've seen my brother recently.
Yes.
Where is he?
With us.
He's all right? Unharmed?
In perfect physical condition and very happy. In fact, only one thing could make him happier.
Yeah.
Sit down, Mr. Walker. My time is limited and I have much to say.
For the next 2 hours, I listened to the most fantastic narrative I had ever heard in my life. It defied logic, reason, and at the same time seemed to explain the flying saucers, the green fireballs, and the disappearances of so many men during the past few years.
Industrialists, artists, jurists, writers, scientists are but a few.
Why? Why are you doing this?
So that someday these men will be able to rebuild what is left of Earth.
Rebuild Earth?
Your experiments into atomic research, juvenile as they are dangerous. You are children playing with matches that could ignite the universe. We cannot let that happen. Therefore, the time is near for us to conquer Earth. You have seen our raypars.
Raypars? I never heard.
I believe you call them flying saucers. Most amusing. These are scouting craft. Soon we shall land in force.
When?
Before I may answer that, Mr. Walker, I must know whether or not you intend to join us.
Oh, I see.
I realize you will want time to consider this proposal.
Yes, I will.
I am authorized to give you 3 days, Earth time. In 72 of your hours exactly, I shall return.
Suppose my answer is no.
Then you shall stay here on Earth.
But I could warn them. Warn all the nations on Earth. Make them stop production of atomic weapons.
Warn them? Do you think they would believe you, Mr. Walker?
All right, Todd. Do you want to tell me now about Harry?
Harry's safe. He's fine.
Well, that's a relief. You hadn't mentioned him all day, so I thought... Well, Todd, where is he?
On the 10th planet.
Oh, darling, stop joking. I'm serious.
So am I. Deadly serious. Jean, listen to me. Listen. And remember that I've never been more serious about anything in my life.
Good evening, Mr. Walker.
Oh, Major Collins. Come in, sir.
Sorry to disturb you at this time of night, Mr. Walker, but we've been very busy at the research center, and I didn't want to think I'd forgotten about you.
Well, it's kind of you to take such an interest, Major, but, to be honest, I don't think we'll be around much longer.
Oh? Have you had some word from your brother, Harry?
No, not exactly, but... Well, under the circumstances, there doesn't seem to be much point in staying here. I'm sure you people do everything you can to find him.
Mr. Walker, are you sure you haven't heard from your brother?
I have neither seen nor talked to my brother.
I ask if you've heard from him.
Yes, I have heard of him.
Mr. Walker, as a citizen, it's your duty to turn any information you may have over to me.
You wouldn't believe my information, Major.
Well, suppose you let me be the judge of that.
All right. I've received a message from Harry.
Where is he?
On the 10th planet.
What?
He is on the 10th planet.
Mr. Walker, this is no
time
to...
I'm perfectly serious, Major. I told you you wouldn't believe me.
I see. And that's all you have to tell me?
One thing more. The inhabitants of that planet are going to conquer this Earth.
With rocket ships and ray guns, I presume. Mr. Walker, I'll ask you once more. Where is your brother?
I've told you.
You leave me no choice, Mr. Walker. I shall have to report the fact that you... Well, that you are withholding vital information. Good night.
Shortly after 10, we heard it. And again, the desert and the room, everything turned that strange metallic green.
It's fantastic. Todd, I'm scared.
No, baby, it's all right. This is just how it was the other night.
How long before he'll come to the house?
Any minute now.
I don't like this.
It's funny. He should have been here by now.
Maybe something's happened. Todd, maybe they're going to kill us.
No. Don't talk like that. I'll take a look out here.
Todd, don't leave me.
Yeah, stay with Bobby. I'll be right back.
Todd!
Good evening, Mr. Go. Walker.
Hoggett. We've been waiting inside for you.
Yes, I know. Have you reached your decision, Mr. Walker?
Yes, we have. We're going to go with you.
We?
My wife and son, we're all packed.
I'm afraid you misunderstood my original proposal, Mr. Walker.
What?
My offer to you did not include your wife and son.
It took me only a second to realize what this meant, and then I turned and ran as fast as I could. Suddenly, in that moment, I was a man of Earth with a wife and child, and I had no intention of leaving them. Jean.
Yes, dear, what?
Get your things, hurry, will you? We're getting out of
Todd,
here.
Todd, what is it?
I'll tell you later. Now, get the car started, and I'll get Bobby.
But what about...
Please,
what
Jean.
Is it, Pop?
We're going home, son. Back to California. Come on. Here we go.
I don't think I'd like it on another planet. I'd like it right here. This other planet, I'd get scared. I want to see...
I'll drive, Jean.
Where are we going?
I'm going past the atomic center. The night was moonlit, pure golden moonlight. It wasn't green anymore, and when we reached the highway, I was sure we'd make it.
Darling, what is it?
I don't know. Gas is all right. Yeah, check my jacket. I'm going to look under the hood. Ignition's okay. It's not flooded. Jean, I don't see a thing wrong.
What shall we do?
There's a gas station about a half a mile down the road. You stay here with Bobby.
Todd!
I won't be gone over 20 minutes. What is it? Oh, no. Green. Everything's turning green. The Raypa, they're coming after me. I've got to get away.
Mr. Walker, why exert yourself?
What? Target.
You cannot escape us.
I'll get away. I've got to get away. I've got to make it.
Jean! Jean!
I'm positive that Earth as we know it is doomed. There's only one slim chance. If Major Collins were to have the radioactive rock we found in my brother's room analyzed, he would find that it is not of our planet. Perhaps then he would realize I was telling the truth. Otherwise, it's only a matter of time. They know our weakness and our strength, and they will conquer and rule the Earth. It's only a matter of time.
Thanks, Joe. And if my voice seems a bit shaky, it's because you've given us something to think about.
Bundle, I really don't think there's a word of truth in this flying saucer business. The other day, I read a statement by a man who runs an airline. He said that 20% of his pilots had never even seen a flying saucer. Oh, by the way, my thanks to Joan Banks and Richard Beale, Ben Wright, Peter Leeds, and Hans Conried, whose performance, you might say, was out of this world.
Thanks again, Joe. We'll hear about next week's Hollywood Star Playhouse right after our Bakers of America home economist, Miss Helen Reed, tells you about a dessert idea for your school lunches. Miss Reed?
Thank you, Mr. Niles. A school lunch may be a light lunch as against an evening meal where you serve several different dishes. But still, a school lunch should be balanced nutritionally. That's why a dessert for lunch is just as essential as for a bigger, heavier meal. And what could be simpler for you to serve or more enjoyable and tasty for your children than cupcakes? Now, you can get either the frosted devil's food cupcakes or the frosted white cupcakes in the bakery department of your food store. You'll find them all neatly wrapped to keep them fresh for several days. And each package usually contains two or perhaps three generous-sized cupcakes. You might get several packages next time you shop for food. And if your children carry their lunch to school, you'll find cupcakes fit into a lunchbox very nicely. Of course, cupcakes make an ideal after-school snack along with a tall, cold glass of milk. Cupcakes are delicious. They're wholesome, and they add extra energy school children need. You'll find they're very economical, too. When you visit your food store, visit the bakery department. Find out what a wonderful variety of ready-to-serve desserts the Bakers of America prepare for you, fresh and delicious, each day.
Thank you, Miss Reed. And now here's a word about next week's Hollywood Star Playhouse. It's a story called The Reluctant Witness, starring Dennis O'Keefe.
Every detail of that horrible accident etched itself on my memory. I was determined that I would never allow myself to be called as a witness. And later, when I found it wasn't an accident, but murder, then it was too late.
Joseph Cotten can currently be seen in the Universal International Technicolor production, Untamed Frontier. Tonight's transcribed story was written for Mr. Cotten by Charlie Smith and Ralph Rose. The entire production is under the direction of Jack Johnstone. All characters and incidents were fictitious, and any similarity to actual characters or incidents is purely coincidental. This is Wendell Niles speaking for the Bakers of America with an invitation to be with us again next Sunday for Hollywood Star Playhouse. Enjoy another half hour of fine dramatic entertainment brought to you direct from Hollywood by the Bakers of America, who are helping you serve better meals through bakery foods.
This is NBC, the national broadcasting company.
All right, that's the Hollywood Star Playhouse from September 7th, 1952, with the 10th Planet, starring Joseph Cotten, got his name right, Lisa. Also in the cast, Hans Conried, he was one of the aliens on that. Joan Banks, Peter Leeds, Jack Johnstone directed that. Dick Beals. I got to work with two of these guys. You know that? I got to work with Dick Beals and also Peter Leeds on a production years ago for my other company, a company that I owned. We did, Lisa, I think I talked to you about this. Dick Beals was a little person. He was the voice of Speedy Alka-Seltzer. And he just never, his voice never changed. He sounded like he was about 9 years old, even when he was an adult. And we did a radio broadcast, it was actually a radio broadcast in the 1930s called Peter Absolute Down the Erie Canal. I should play it on the air sometime because we got all of these great radio stars from the golden age that were still alive. This was 20-something years ago. And it was about a boy traveling. It was sort of a lot like Huck Finn, you know, something like that. And he was traveling down the Erie Canal and these adventures and all the stuff. And
was this an adult show or
No, it was a juvenile show, yeah. But the original script still survived. But the audio, because it was live,
right?
Nobody had the recording of it. So I hired Dick Beals and all of these other great radio actors to come in. We flew them in. And we did a production of it, and I haven't heard it in years. But I remember it came out. It came out really well. Maybe we'll play it.
Yeah, I'd love to hear it.
It's called Peter Absolute Down the Erie Canal. Yeah, it was good.
Good. Let's do it.
You know what'd be really cool to do?
What?
I've tried to do this. I've tried to get the rights to do this. You know how I've done the Twilight Zones?
Yeah, of course.
I tried to get the rights from Condé Nast, which is now owned by Advanced Comics. I tried to get the rights to do The Shadow, to redo The Shadow.
Oh, that would be amazing.
Because first of all, most of the Shadow broadcasts that still exist today are not that good a quality. They're just, I don't know, for some reason, the preservation of the original 16-inch discs was not very good. So there's maybe 30, 40 episodes that are in decent quality, and then there's maybe another 100 episodes that are not so good quality, and then the rest of them, gone.
So what kind of roadblocks did you hit when trying to
get
the rights?
Because remember there was the Alec Baldwin movie?
Sure. Yeah.
I think that was in 1989 or something like that. Maybe 1991 or something like that. Well, they were like, oh, no, we have this big movie coming out.
Yeah,
this
it's had its time.
Yeah, but let me tell you. So they sort of shut me down. Then after that movie came out, maybe 10 years later, I went back to them and said, I'd like to get. And they said, no, we have another movie in the works, so we don't want to do anything. But it never.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a Shadow movie.
Try again.
I would
tomorrow.
Like to do it.
Yeah.
And you know who I was thinking would be the perfect guy to play Lamont Cranston,
who?
Alias the Shadow?
Roger Badish.
Well, Roger would be great. But I was thinking of Kelsey Grammer.
Oh, I love Kelsey.
He's
Grammer.
Got one of those awesome voices. To me, he sounds a lot like Orson Welles.
He has a similar voice, no qualms. So, he also has a voice that you sit up and listen to. When he speaks, it's just a very confident,
and he likes doing radio.
Voice.
He likes doing radio audio dramas and things. And if I ever get the rights to The Shadow do them, I'm going to see if I can cast Kelsey Grammer.
Work
and then
on
you're
it.
The lovely Margot Lane.
Of course.
All right, let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. So I'm guessing you didn't take a nap today at all, Lisa.
What makes you say?
Because when I was talking just a little while ago, I saw you kind of...
I was falling asleep while you're... Well, that's just when you're talking.
Her eyes were kind of rolling.
That's because you don't really say anything that kind of keeps me interested.
Did you say something? The uvula. Just cut that right out. Just snip.
Right? And then what would that do?
You'd stop your snoring.
Oh. Well, maybe I could just do it myself. Just go in there and just get ready.
I'd go to one of those outpatient...
Get
things.
It done right.
Yeah, go. Yeah,
and then what do you do with that?
You've
little
got good
piece
medical
when
insurance,
you're done,
don't you? You have some.
What
good
do you do with the uvula when you're done with
just,
it?
I don't know. I mean, you could put it in a petri jar, mm-hmm. something like that, and just keep
kind
it.
Kind of watch it grow.
Yeah, but you wouldn't be, you know, that annoying. Be gone.
I'm gonna have to work at that.
Yeah, Lisa needs to take a nap because this show is late. You know?
Did you notice that?
And you got up early today, you said, right?
You got up earlier.
I played baseball today, so I was up at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
And then I had no nap.
Although I don't nap on the couch here at WGN.
I get here early, folks, and so when I'm real early, I just take a little siesta.
When I call you and you
siesta
don't answer, I know
room
that you're sleeping.
Yeah, I'm in the green room sleeping, taking a little
snoring
nap.
Snoring away.
But no, I was trying to take a nap, but then Mike Stark called me.
Well, that's new.
And he's listening to the show.
Well, that's
he called me, and he's just telling me about it. And I'm like, Mike, I really want to take a nap.
Well, somehow I called you to answer the phone.
No. Well, you know.
You know, you got to pick and choose. I got you.
That's true. Yep. All right, so it's I always take your call.
Do you?
You're important.
Hmm.
You're a very important person.
Just keep telling me.
You're my co-host.
I know.
I mean, come on.
That's what I'm saying.
Jeez,
who wouldn't
Louise
answer the phone when I call, right?
Yeah.
You see my name?
Yeah.
And you like automatically like run for the phone.
Oh, everybody answers your call.
I know.
Yeah.
That's how it should be.
It's 1 o'clock in the morning. Wow.
No.
Yeah. It's 1 o'clock. Hey, you know when we come back, yes?
I'm just wondering if you need me to come down there and throw cold water on you guys.
Just keep talk to him, Roger. I'm fine. He's the one over there that's fallen off his chair.
You got up at 6 yesterday
I was up
morning
at 6. I played.
He's just
I was on the ball field at 8 o'clock in
I
the morning.
I wasn't even home from
played
work
baseball
at 6.
Don't listen. He just likes to complain,
I know,
Roger.
Yeah. So. Hey, you know what, Roger?
What?
Tomorrow, tonight when
tonight,
we get back
Sunday,
here.
Yeah.
What's my favorite radio show, Roger?
Why do you have to ask me the hard
questions?
Because
we've talked about that. I thought you took notes.
He's not listening. He's
up
there. He's
busy. I must have been home. I didn't know we were going to have a test today.
It's a comedy with Lucille Ball.
My favorite husband.
Thank you. See, you knew that.
And then we have the sealed book, A Good Mystery.
Ooh.
And then Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall in their only regular radio show. What was that called?
The Humphrey Bogart Show? I don't know.
No. Bold Venture.
Old Venture.
Yeah. So close.
So that's going to be fun.
Missed it by
that much.
Snoring away.
But no, I was trying to take a nap, but then Mike Stark called me.
Well, that's
new. And he's listening to the show.
Well, that's
he called me, and he's just telling me about it. And I'm like, Mike, I really want to take a nap.
Well, somehow I called you to answer the phone.
No. Well, you know.
You know, you got to pick and choose. I got you.
That's true. Yep. All right, so it's I always take your call.
Do you?
You're important.
Hmm.
You're a very important person.
Just keep telling me.
You're my co-host.
I know.
I mean, come on.
That's what I'm saying.
Jeez,
who wouldn't
Louise
answer the phone when I call, right?
Yeah.
You see my name,
yeah,
and you like automatically like run for the phone.
Oh, everybody answers your call.
I know.
Yeah.
That's how it should be.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thanks, Roger, and thanks, Bill Curtis. Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you, Carl.
And to all of our listeners, because they're staying up late with us. If you're listening to us right now in hour three, thank you for staying up late. And, you know, the average person listens over an hour to our show. We have a very long listen-to kind of timeline.
A long listen-to?
Well, I mean, I don't know what it's called.
Time-spent listening.
There it is. Time-spent listening.
Yeah.
See, I'm surrounded by experts. Time spent listening. It's over an hour, Raj.
Well, because one full show, you know, episode is an hour.
No, it's not. It's a half an hour.
We played the half an hour
the
episode.
Classic radio shows
in each
are
hour
half an hour. So they're
but you play part one, like, between now and
1:30,
and then...
No, I understand that. Yeah, but the...
You spread it out over
either way, right. it's still a long time. I mean, that's a long...
Yeah, but it's worth listening to.
Yes, and so we were very thankful, and we have a lot of listeners, and our ratings are great, and we want to thank all of our listeners, especially when you stay up late with us. And you know what, Lisa, check the Facebook, and we're up to 2240, so we had 18 people click on it in the last maybe hour. So our goal by the end of the night is to get 10 more, right? 2250 we'd like to be at.
Okay, we're so close.
2250. So, folks, if you haven't liked us, please go to Facebook, search WGN Radio Theater. We'd really appreciate it if you could like us and help us get to 2250 tonight.
Yeah, and feel free to post to us, too. We love to talk to you throughout the show.
All right, this hour, it's Night Beat starring Frank Lovejoy, and it's brought to you by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow!
This actor stars as Deadpool in the upcoming film Deadpool 2, the sequel to 2016's Deadpool.
What do they win?
They are going to get a Twilight Zone 4 CD set.
All right, you'll hear them right here.
Not big on cats.
Spooky.
All right, who is that actor? 312-981-7200. Win some Twilight Zone CDs. We'll be right back.
We're back. This is the WGN.
I think it's just 352, but they put a dash in
what
there.
What did you say?
I think I said 3-52, but it's actually 352. Okay. But see, there's a dash there.
Mm. Are we good now?
Yeah.
Okay. So, we're playing Celebrity Scoop. We're going to play that one more time.
Not big on cats.
Spooky.
Dustin, how are you?
Hi, I'm great. How are you?
Good, good, good to hear from you. Glad you called in. And who is that actor?
It's Ryan Reynolds.
Ryan Reynolds is exactly right, and we are so happy to send you a Twilight Zone 4 CD set. You're going to love it. Stacey Keach is great in it. Carl's a great producer. And it has some of the greatest actors ever. So we hope that you enjoy that.
Oh, I will.
Well, thank you for calling in and for listening.
Thank you.
Take
Thanks,
care,
Dustin.
Ryan. Dustin.
All right. It is time now for Nightbeat. You ready for this, Lisa?
I'm ready for Nightbeat, Carl.
As I said, this show was set in Chicago. It was a newspaper drama. It came to NBC Radio in February of 1950, and it starred Frank Lovejoy. He played Randy Stone, a reporter for the Chicago Star. I don't think there's a Chicago Star newspaper.
No, it's fictitious.
Yeah, the Chicago Star newspaper. He covered the Nightbeat. He roamed the Windy City in search of human interest stories for his column, and it had L.A.'s supporting best, Joan Banks, Parley Bear, William Conrad, Paul Frees. It was last heard in 1952. This was a quality show, which I think you will really like. This is called Night is a Weapon from February 13th, 1950. Here's Frank Lovejoy in part one of Night Beat.
Night Beat.
Hi, this is Randy Stone. I cover the Night Beat for the Chicago Star. Stories start in many different ways. But tonight's story began when one man tried to destroy another with the strangest weapon of all. Darkness.
Night Beat, starring Frank Lovejoy as Randy Stone.
When your job is to walk into the darkness and discover what makes a city tick, you pick up some mighty strange friends. The winos dreaming of a Muscatel paradise in cold, dark doorways. The petty larceny boys with their fast deals. The painted little dames defying the world with their brassy laughter. The homeless, the hopeless. In the city, night is for the lost. And sometimes you feel a hunger to be with someone of the everyday world, some nice, well-adjusted soul who's got a reason for waking up tomorrow morning. I guess that's why I dropped in to see Bessie Chatfield tonight. Bessie's a little gray-haired librarian who has charge of a small storefront library on Huron Street. No one around this time of night but Bessie and a young fellow in a gray raincoat alone at a reading table.
Mr. Stone, well, we haven't seen you, in such a long time.
Well, since Forever Amber, you haven't had the kind of high-type literature that interests me.
And when you finally do drop in, look what time you get here. 10 o'clock. Right when I have to go over and start turning out the lights.
I timed it that way so I could get you behind those bookcases, away from that fellow with the reading desk.
Well, I'm afraid your timing is about 35 years off, Mr. Stone. These light switches, why do they always put them up so high?
Aren't you going to tell that fellow it's time to go home?
This is the way we tell them. We flick off the lights and then flick them on again. First off, like this.
No! Don't do that! No!
What?
Turn the lights on quick. Let me handle him.
What's the idea of doing that, mister?
That's supposed to be smarter, sir.
Oh, take it easy, fella. Take it easy.
Or did he pay you to do it? Is that the deal?
Huh?
You tell George Brewster that the game doesn't amuse me anymore. You tell him if he keeps that up, I'll kill him.
Oh, wait. I turned the lights out. It's closing time.
What? Closing time? Oh. Yes, of course.
What's wrong with you, buddy? You sick or something?
Sick. Sick, yes, that's me sick. Only mine's a childhood disease. Childhood.
Now, what in the world was that?
I don't know. Ever seen him before?
He's come in a couple of times this week. Spent all his time reading some reference books at the table. Seemed to be such a nice, polite young man. Considerate, kindly.
Let's take a look at those books.
Oh, my heavens, my heart is beating a mile a minute. And did you see his face? It frightened me.
He was even more scared than we were.
Of what?
These are books he was reading?
Yes.
The Mind in Limbo, Abnormal Psychology, Modern Psychiatry.
Why would he want books like this?
Maybe he was looking for somebody in these books.
Who?
Himself, Bessie. Probably himself. Bessie was pretty upset, so after she locked up for the night, I started walking her toward the elevated station over on Lake Street. We'd walked a couple of blocks through the dark, empty streets when suddenly Bessie grabbed my arm.
Mr. Stone, that man down the street, looking in that store window, That's him.
Yes, same gray raincoat, same lad.
And look, Mr. Stone, what's that in his hand?
That's a piece of paper, son.
He's breaking that store window.
Yeah, you wait right here, honey.
Be careful, Mr. Stone, be careful.
The fellow was reaching through the broken window glass for whatever it was that had struck his fancy. He heard me coming and turned toward me. The wan streetlight did something to his face. It seemed twisted and torn. Blood was running down his hand where the glass had cut it. Then I saw what he'd taken from the window. A gun. What's the idea, pal? He spun around and started running for the elevated station down the block. And in the best tradition of the Rover boys, I stayed right on his tail. He turned back to see how I was doing, and he stumbled over a trash can near the curb. I caught up with him, grabbing his arm.
Go away. Leave me alone. Let go of me.
He slashed the gun across my face and began running again. I stopped long enough to take a quick inventory of my teeth. Up above, I heard the elevator train coming into the station. The young fellow had reached the station steps and was going up fast, trying to make that train. I reached for one of his legs. He turned and gave it to me right in the stomach. I folded up, and I just sat there. I listened to the train pull away with the fellow on it and remembered what Bessie had said about him being such a nice, polite young man. After a while, I began to feel somewhat human again. I notified the police what had happened, and they sent a squad car out. After they left, I remembered something, a name this nice, polite young man had been throwing around. George Brewster. I found a phone book in a cigar store. There were three George Brewsters. The first number didn't answer. I tried the second.
Hello?
I'd like to speak to George Brewster.
Oh, he's not in right now. Is there any message?
Who is this?
I'm his sister. Is anything wrong?
Well, if this is the right George Brewster, something is wrong. Is there any reason why a young fellow should want to kill your brother?
Oh, that would be Morrison. Oh, I warned George.
Morrison, huh?
Tom Morrison.
Where does he live?
Our old apartment, 612 Hamlin Avenue. What makes you think he wants to kill George?
Well, this character broke into a store tonight and stole a gun. I sort of think he had your brother in mind when he did it.
Oh, no. What am I going to do?
Well, lady, I know what I'm going to do. As fast as I hang up and get another nickel into this phone, I'm going to call the police.
Morrison's fault, poor man.
Oh, no, he's just a prince of a fellow. Goodbye, lady. I've got to make a call. But then it turned out that I didn't have a nickel. And on the way to the counter for change, I started wondering why the sister of the man he was going to kill felt sorry for Morrison. And why Bessie thought he was such a sweet character. And, well, the night was young and 612 Hamlin Avenue couldn't wait, and I could call the cops later. Yeah. 612 North Hamlin was a second floor flat on the north side. I got there a few minutes after 11 that night. All the windows were lit up. I rang the bell and I waited.
I felt a little bead of sweat zigzagging down my face like I didn't have any place to go.
Yes? Oh, it's you.
No, no, let's not close the door just yet. In fact, let's push it open all the way.
Oh. What do you want?
My two front teeth and a few ribs.
Get out of here.
Now, look, pal, don't tempt me. It came against my better judgment to listen to what you've got to say. If I leave now, the only place I'm going is the nearest police station.
Police station. I guess maybe that would be the best.
What?
Otherwise, I don't know what's going to happen. Yeah, I guess you better call the police, mister.
What do you think you're doing, calling my bluff?
The phone's right behind you.
Okay, buddy, you asked for it. Sure this is the way you want it?
It's better this way. I'm at the end of my rope. I don't want to kill him.
George Brewster?
Yes, George Brewster. I know how it'll end if he doesn't stop.
Stop what?
Call the police, mister. You'd be doing me a favor.
Since when have I got to do you favors?
Well, why aren't you calling?
I'm an Eagle Scout in good standing. I haven't done my good deed for the day.
You can't help me, mister.
Stone is the name. What makes you so sure I can?
Thanks for even wanting to. After that bad time I gave you.
Bad time? That's the understatement of the year.
Well, I was panic-stricken. He got me half crazy.
Well, what have you got to lose if you tell me about it?
No.
Okay.
Wait. I don't know. I'm like a drowning man grasping at straws. Look, maybe if you talked to Brewster, told him what he's doing to me, maybe he'd leave me alone.
Well, you never can tell. But I'd have to know what I'm talking about.
It's quite a story, mister. These lights. Look at them. Bright as the sun, aren't they? Lamps. Overhead chandeliers. Look at them.
I'd hate to see your light bills.
Like some men need drugs. That's how I need these lights.
Come again?
My sanity depends on it. My very sanity.
And these lights?
It's a sickness. You've even got a name for it. Noctophobia, it's called. Fear of darkness.
Fear of darkness? That's for kids. No, I take that back. I'm sorry.
Don't be. I quite agree. Kids. Or neurotic women. But in a man of my age, it's quite ridiculous. Only when the day starts drawing to a close, when the night starts crowding in.
Have you been to a doctor?
Sure, I've been to doctors. They tell me I shouldn't feel too badly. Plenty of people with my trouble. A hangover from childhood. An illness. Like heart trouble is an illness. I'll take the heart trouble.
Maybe you haven't gone to the right kind of a doctor. Maybe psychiatry could help.
Nothing's going to help me. George Brewster's going to see to that.
What about this, Brewster?
He's trying to destroy me. With the strangest weapon of all.
The strangest weapon of all?
Yes. His weapon is the night.
It was a weird feeling standing in Morrison's brilliantly lighted parlor, listening to him tell me about his terror of darkness. A sturdy, healthy-looking man trapped by a childhood nightmare. I felt guilt listening to him like I was eavesdropping into a dark corner of his mind that was nobody's business but his own. And yet he had to tell me because he needed help. Because George Brewster was using Morrison's fear to destroy him.
I was sent to Chicago by our company to replace Brewster Stone. Till he found out why I was here, he couldn't do enough for me. He even got me this apartment.
Greater love has no man.
Then he found out what the setup was. He changed fast enough.
How did he find out about this fear of yours?
Well, I'm telling you how. The other night, the two of us were working alone in the big vault down at the office, working on some old account or other. The overhead light blew out.
Uh-huh.
Well, it was so sudden, I couldn't help myself. I tried to keep calm, but... Well, it's like something tearing me to pieces inside. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't... Finally, I had to run.
So he found out about...
No, he wasn't sure, but... It started him thinking.
As I see.
Next afternoon, he came over to my desk. He was jovial, friendly, like he'd been in the beginning. Saying we'd been at each other's throats long enough. Inviting me to have dinner with him that night. Right from work, we went to his favorite spot on the north side, a place called the Catacombs. I began feeling uneasy the moment I entered.
That's the first portion of Nightbeat, starring Frank Lovejoy. We'll get back to it in a few moments. Well, we did some research on the suspense theme, and that's what it's called. The suspense theme.
See, and that's a good title.
Yeah, it was written by Bernard Herrmann, who was probably one of the greatest composers of music of the 1930s and 40s, I think. He might have been the number one guy.
He did a lot of Alfred Hitchcock
films. He did. He absolutely did. He did the music for Psycho and some of his other films. And he did a lot of music for radio. And also, he worked a lot with Orson Welles.
Mm-hmm.
Orson Welles used him for a lot of his radio broadcasts, like the Mercury Theater on the Air. And in fact, he was, I believe he was blind, Bernard Herrmann. Yeah. And he was married to Lucille Fletcher, who wrote Sorry Wrong Number, and she wrote many other great radio plays, but his wife was Lucille Fletcher.
Interesting.
Yeah, and so and I interviewed her once years ago. I should play that interview where she talks about, because I asked her, how did you come up with the idea for Sorry Wrong Number? And also she wrote The Hitchhiker, which was not only broadcast on Suspense, but then Rod Serling took the story and created a Twilight Zone episode. It wasn't called The Hitchhiker, it was called something else. But she was talking about how she would come up with these ideas, and they were just incidents in her life. She said the Sorry Wrong Number lady, you know, which was played by Agnes Moorehead on radio, and then in the movie Barbara Stanwyck played the part. She said there was this kind of woman who used to come to the grocery store when she had her baby, and she would go to the grocery store to get milk, and there was this very annoying woman that would be there a lot and be complaining about everything. And she thought, I'm going to make a radio play about her, because that's what she did. She wrote, you know, scary radio plays and things. And it was fascinating, Roger. You would love this. It was one of my favorite interviews, because she was just so happy to talk about her life with Bernard Herrmann and working with Orson Welles and creating these amazing radio plays, and how popular Sorry Wrong Number was when Agnes Moorehead did it on radio, and then how they turned it into a movie, and she got to adapt that screenplay, and working with Barbara Stanwyck. It's a great interview. I mean, she's great on it, at least.
Are you going to be able to play it on the show?
Oh, yeah, I could play it on the air, sure.
Sure.
Yeah, maybe I'll do that. Maybe we'll do a night of Lucille Fletcher radio shows.
Ooh.
And then play that interview. That would be fun.
Yeah.
We will do that around Halloween, right? That'd be fun.
That would be cool.
Yeah.
Sure.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
About this time of the night, I can't remember if I'm Carl Amari or if you're Carl Amari or if I'm Lisa Wolf.
You just want to be me.
I do want to be you. Yeah, it'd be fun to be you and be driven around in a Bentley convertible by her driver.
Well, you know, what can I say?
You know, and
you know,
my
when
nails
you got it,
done
you got
all
it.
The time. And
oh, look who's talking,
masseuse.
And now that I would like, I would really want a chef.
I haven't gotten a manicure in a long
really?
Time.
Yeah. I really would like a chef. That would be my number one.
Can't afford a manicure, Lisa.
Well, keep working.
I need a raise. Give me a raise.
Yeah.
Can you help me out?
Can
here?
You help me out? Oh, Carl. That's the only thing we've ever fought about is money.
Really?
Yeah.
You and I have fought about money?
Just we've had like one fight ever, and it was about money.
Okay, so we've known each other 10 years.
About
right. 10 years.
Yeah,
maybe
that's
more.
About right.
Maybe
at
more.
At least maybe a little more.
And we had one fight, and it was
mm-hmm.
about money?
Mm-hmm.
So you're probably being cheap to me.
That must
right?
be it. I'm sure you're right
it
about that.
It must have been something like that.
I'm sure that
That's
was
the
it.
Only time we ever had a disagreement. I think maybe.
Well, there was one other when I... I don't know if I should say it.
No, I don't probably. Don't.
That one.
What? I don't know.
It was with your phone.
Oh, my phone. I don't know.
I answered it once.
Oh, yeah. I remember.
But it was no big deal.
That's nothing.
It was nothing.
I wasn't mad at you.
You kind of were.
I was not. You know, I just like,
for, like
I'm like a hothead.
Minutes.
I just for like, shoo, and then it's like, fine. You know me.
Yeah, I do know you.
But so, yeah, I would say that in the 10 years we've known each other, we've never had a disagreement.
Yeah,
I don't know if people realize this.
I'm so good-natured,
Carl. Because a lot of times we go places, people think we're married. And
yeah.
I know you wish we were.
Yeah.
But we're
I
not.
Mean,
sorry.
I like bag but, and bag, but you just
you know,
won't do it.
But, you know, listen, hey, Dan... He's a good catch, Lisa.
He is.
That's a good man you got there.
Well, he, you know.
Dan is a good man. So here's the thing.
You're a good man, Charlie.
So Brown. Lisa and I are best friends. And that's rare for a guy and a girl to be best friends. And
I
we
think
are.
So.
Lisa's my best friend, absolute best friend. Well, I mean, I have other best friends that are male. I have male best friends, Mike, Bo, you know, and Vince. And I mean, you know, these are my best friends. But you're my, I mean, like, I don't know, you're because you're my co-host, we work together.
Well, we probably wouldn't work together if we did not get along so well.
Yeah, we get along great.
Yeah, and, it wouldn't work out.
We're best buddies.
Yeah, everybody else has left you, but I stood steadfast and true.
No matter what's going on in my life, I could call Lisa.
It's true.
Get that advice.
You just told me something.
Free advice.
Very intimate.
Yeah.
Just free, recently.
Free advice from Lisa. She doesn't charge me or anything.
Well, you know.
She has... master's degrees in psychology, and I ask her, you know, for advice, and she gives it to me. Doesn't send me a bill.
Oh yeah, you'll pay. Don't you worry.
Appreciate it. I was just going to say it's not the end of the month yet.
This no, is he'll true. Pay. He'll pay. The bill. Nothing's free. Right?
Here's the sound you hear when I get a bill from Lisa. You ready?
Right in a circular file,
yeah,
right?
The funny thing is bills don't even come on paper anymore. They're all electronic, true, so yeah. That won't work true. For me anymore. You can just Venmo me, Carl.
Venmo you. All right. Let's get back now to Nightbeat.
How do you like this place, Tom?
That's okay. It's fine.
It's been a favorite of mine for years. One spot in particular. The wine cellar. How do you feel about wine?
I like it all right.
Come along with me. I'm a wine man from way back.
Say, George, I wanted to talk to you about that little outburst last night.
They have a different wine cellar here with a different temperature for each type of wine.
I haven't been sleeping well, you see.
Me, I prefer a Riesling myself. Well, here we are.
Huh?
The white wine cellar. We'll select our own brand for our supper. Here, I'll open the door. Yeah, this is a privilege only an old customer like me can get away with. Come on.
Dark down there.
That's why they've got this candle here on the ledge. Got a match?
Why?
A match, Tom. Mm.
Yeah. Here.
Okay. I'll get this candle going. Good. Now, let's go downstairs.
George, you think we should do this on our own?
Done it hundreds of times. Been coming here for the last 10 years. Well, now let's go down these stairs. Careful.
Yeah. George, I was explaining about last night.
This candle casts funny shadows, doesn't it? You notice how cool it is? 20 feet below street level here.
Look, I want to talk about last night. I don't want any misunderstanding.
Huh?
It's just that I've been working pretty hard.
Look, Tom. Would it make you feel better if you showed me you're not afraid of the dark? Okay, you can show me. I'll blow out the candle.
What are you trying to prove, Brewster?
Nothing at all. It's your idea.
Where are those matches I gave you?
You gave me some matches? Well, I must have lost them.
It's not going to work, Brewster. I'm not insane, you know. I can stay down here until you're quite satisfied.
Funny, isn't it, about the darkness? The way it seems to close in on you. The way you start thinking you can't breathe. I know, I can see how someone could... What's the matter, Tom?
This is ridiculous.
Something so suffocating about a dark room.
Stop it. Stop it.
Only the heavy, smothering blackness.
Stop it.
Where are you going, Tom? Anything wrong? Anything wrong? Anything wrong?
Ran out of that cellar like a kid, like a... kid scared to death, Stone.
That was a rotten thing for him to do.
Well, he's fighting for his job, Stone. He's not too young anymore. Can't start all over again, so he'll do anything.
Oh, great.
I'm sure he's told the people down at work. I'm sure they're all laughing at me behind my back. You don't know what that does to me.
I can imagine.
Today I found a new desk lamp on my desk, courtesy of George Brewster. Every day, something like that.
Did you ask him why he's doing it?
He won't admit he's doing anything. Says it's all my imagination. Maybe I ought to see a doctor. Or better still, maybe a change of climate would help. Well, I'd leave town in a minute. Only my future's at stake, too. Before I let him drive me crazy, I'll kill him.
Well, I'm going now. I'm going to talk to this bird. Where does he live?
Out in the suburbs, Lake Forest. He lives with his sister.
All right, I'll give you a ring as soon as I've seen him.
Mrs. Stone, I hope you can do some good.
Yeah. Oh. Say, I almost forgot something.
What?
That gun you made off with.
Well, I...
Maybe if we're lucky, we can talk the store owner out of pressing charges. I'll try.
That was a crazy thing to do. I was so desperate.
Wouldn't have done you much good. When they put them in the window, they never loaded. I'll let you in on a secret. If I hadn't known that, I wouldn't have been such a hero coming here tonight.
I'll let you in on a secret, Mr. Stone. You can get bullets without a license. The gun's loaded now.
Oh, great. All right, go and get it for me.
All right. Yes, I want to give it to you. It's in my bedroom.
He started for the bedroom. And then it was almost like a comedy routine where, after the big build-up, the punchline comes right out on cue. The moment he entered the other room, every light in the house suddenly went out.
What happened to the lights?
Take it easy. Where's the fuse box?
I don't know. Never had any occasion to use it. Besides, if it was a fuse, all the lights wouldn't go out. It wasn't you.
Use your head. How could I do it?
I'm getting out of here. All lights out, too. Stone,
well, maybe something went wrong with the central wire.
But why should it happen exactly now? Wait.
Huh?
The downstairs apartment. Their lights are on. If it was the wire,
All right, let's ask them where the fuse box is.
Oh, Mr. Morris.
My lights went out. It might be a fuse. Where are the fuse boxes for these apartments?
Out in the back. I'll get a flashlight and show you. Here we are. The fuse box is right here below our meters. Whenever the people from the light company come out, they have a dickens of a time finding it.
Will you hold the flashlight steady? Let me take a look.
Wait a minute, Stone. Lower the flashlight just a little.
Huh?
It's not the fuse. Look at the master switch on my meter. Look at the one of Mrs. Graham's.
Why, somebody pulled your switch down to off.
Yes. Yes, someone surely did.
Well, here, let me push it up. There.
And look upstairs. All your lights are on again.
That's probably some kids playing a joke.
Now, how do you suppose the rascals ever found it? It's so well hidden.
I've got a theory that all kids come equipped with a special radar finding things like this.
Mrs. Graham, tell this gentleman who used to live in my apartment before I did.
Why?
Tell him.
Why, you know. He even got the apartment for you. Your friend, Mr. Brewster. But what is that?
Tom, that doesn't prove he did it.
For me, it does, Stone. For me, it does.
Morrison went around to the front of his house and up the stairs to his flat. I waited in the hallway until he came down again. He looked different. His face was hard and set. His eyes were like chunks of glass punched into the flesh.
What are you waiting for, Stone?
When we were so rudely interrupted, you were going for the gun.
I've got it now.
Oh, yes. Hand it over. I'll bring it back.
No, thanks.
Where are you going and what are you going to do?
I'm fighting for my sanity, my life. He's never going to do this to me again. Never.
I can't let you do that.
You're not going to have to.
The minute you leave, I'm going to call every cop in the book.
Yes, that's what you do, isn't it?
Yes.
And I'd better give you the gun.
This could become habit-forming. I dropped to my knees in the hallway, and then the hallway subdivided like something under a microscope, and there were two hallways, and then there were four. And then everywhere I looked, there were hallways. Morrison tried to push me aside and get by me, only it was a whole circle of Morrisons. I grabbed at his legs to hold him back and was like grabbing at a centipede. Then all the Morrisons in all the hallways brought all their guns down on my one poor head. And that was it, brothers and sisters, that was it.
Feeling better, Mr. Stone?
Oh, if I felt any better, I'd call an embalmer. Oh, what a business.
I heard a commotion and I came out and you were lying here.
Oh, is this my head or is it a cantaloupe?
Oh, how did it happen and where's Mr. Morrison?
Oh, Morrison, yes. How long ago did you hear this commotion?
Well, just a couple of minutes ago. You came out of it real fast.
Yeah, I've got an iron constitution. Have you got a phone?
Well, yes, but don't you think you
better... Come on, lady, grab my head, put it back on nice and neat and let's get to that phone. Hello, this is the fellow who called you before, Miss Brewster, about Morrison and your brother.
Oh, yes.
He's not there yet, huh?
No, my brother is...
I don't mean your brother, I mean Morrison.
What? No,
Oh, yes, he sure is. Now, give me your address, and the minute you hang up, get away from your house as fast as you can. Morrison's got a gun, and he's half crazy.
Maybe we should call the police.
Well, maybe we should, but I'm not going to. They'd throw the book at him 10 years for attempted murder. I think I can stop him before he does anything.
Oh, I can't tell you how sorry I am about this.
Lady, you and your brother should be. The cab got me out to their Lake Forest house in less than 20 minutes. The house was on a hill, and a flagstone path wound round and round for a city block until it reached the front porch. As I ran up the walk, my head started rattling like a handful of pennies in a tin cup. I felt weak and tired. All the time, I tried not to think about what I'd find when I reached the house. And now I was at the end of the path, walking toward the front porch. A nerve deep in my throat started jangling like a burglar alarm. The house was in darkness. And Morrison was standing beneath a little porch light, his gun pointed right at me.
You won't quit, will you, Stone?
What have you done with him, Tom?
He hasn't done anything with him yet, Mr. Stone.
Huh? Who is...
I'm sitting over here at the end of the porch. I'm George's sister.
Oh. I didn't see you in the dark. Why didn't you get away like I told you?
I won't hurt her. It's him. He'll be coming along soon.
George would never have done what he did. I begged him not to. To take advantage of a man's weakness.
Well, Mr. Brewster is coming home.
What?
His car is stopping at the bottom of the hill. Now he's starting the long climb.
Morrison, listen to me.
You just sit there, the both of you. And I must insist that you be very quiet.
Please, listen to me. Please. Please.
Keep coming up that path, Brewster. It's a long, long way.
You must listen to me.
Morrison.
You don't know what you're
waiting near the porch light, the gun
George
in his
hurt
hand.
You. He shouldn't have done that.
Far below the small figure of George Brewster
so
making a long, slow climb.
Realize that. You're going to kill George because he found out about your fear. But don't you see? George is afraid, too. Of bigger things. Of being 53 and seeing his whole life going down.
Brewster had stopped at the first landing to catch his breath.
That's why he hurt you.
Now he was climbing up the path again.
He was fighting.
Maybe 100 steps from his death. I found myself counting the steps.
Why are you afraid of the darkness tomorrow? Don't you see? If you weren't afraid, George couldn't hurt you anymore. Please, listen to me.
Keep your voice down. If you try to warn him, you both die, too. Keep coming, Brewster.
Yes, he kept coming. No more than 70 steps now.
What is there to fear about the dog?
The girl's voice going on and on.
Nothing.
Brewster getting closer.
All it does is hide the world.
Less than 50 steps now. 40 steps. 30 steps.
If you believe in God, if you believe in your own soul, how can you fear the night? What is there in the darkness that can hurt you? There's such peace in the darkness. After the heat of day is gone, rush, the tumult, the struggle, you can breathe easy again. You can let the tightness inside unwind.
He's almost close enough.
Listen to me. Please listen.
It's not going to work, Miss Brewster. I'm going to try and run.
Wait.
Miss Brewster.
Stay where you are, Miss Brewster.
No. You must see me in the light.
I tell you, stay where...
Tom. Look at her.
I didn't realize.
I'm not afraid. What right have you to fear?
Julie, is that you on the porch?
What right have you to fear, Mr. Morrison?
What right?
Oh, what a long climb. Must be getting old. Well, what are you doing here, Morrison? And who's this?
Oh, don't mind me. I just came along for the ride.
What's this all about?
I just came to... say goodbye, Brewster.
You're leaving?
Yes. I'm going back and tell them you've done a good job here. It's not fair to replace you after so many years.
Sure nobody scared you away, Morrison?
Look at him, Brewster. Does he look like he's afraid? I don't know if Julie cured Morrison of his fear of darkness. Cure is a pretty strong word. But maybe she helped. I kind of think so.
I do know this. It's going to be mighty hard for Tom to fear the darkness, knowing Julie is not afraid. But neither Tom nor I will ever forget what we saw as the porch light lit up her face. Julie Brewster, who did not fear the darkness, was blind. And now that part of the story they always print in heavy type, the morrow. And don't smile so indulgently. Morrows are very nice things. Some of my best friends are morrows. You know, seriously, Julie's whole life is a morrow in itself. And trying to top it is like trying to follow Al Jolson with a mammy song. The best you can do is tip your hat to the fellow who wrote, "Out of the night that covers me, I thank whatever gods may be for my unconquerable soul." He must have had someone like Julie in mind. Well, 4 o'clock in the morning, stale cup of coffee, a tired sandwich, and a story to dictate, and I worry about my unconquerable soul. Ah, me. Give me a rewrite.
Nightbeat, a new dramatic series, stars Frank Lovejoy as Randy Stone. Nightbeat is written by Larry Marcus and directed by Warren Lewis. Music by Frank Worth. Listen next week at this same time and every week as Randy Stone searches through the city for the strange stories waiting for him in the darkness. The stories that come out of the shadows to find their way into Nightbeat.
Great series. We have a lot of them. We play it here. What I love about it is that it was set right here in Chicago, and he was a reporter for the Chicago Star looking for human interest stories. There's a lot of them. There's a lot of human interest stories,
in Chicago,
as Roger will
mean?
Tell you. A lot going on in Chicago. This is from February 13th, 1950, Nightbeat, starring Frank Lovejoy in a terrific series, and I hope you enjoyed that.